This was the very first video played on MTV when MTV hit the air at 12:01, August the 1st, 1981. I'm Scoot on the air. Every August 1st, we talk about MTV and the musical revolution that it created. But MTV did not live up to the reputation of the videos killing the radio star. And here I am after all these years, after being on music radio, here I am still here today. So we'll talk about why radio did not die. There were rumors when TV first came out that radio would die. So there's a reason why radio is still pertinent today. And I know a lot of younger generations have moved on to podcast and different internet outlets for information and for entertainment. And all that's cool. I am so amazed at the younger people who listen to our show and the people who will approach me in public. And I'm just I'm shocked at some of the younger people who listen to the show. I'm thrilled to have you, because this show was not just built for baby boomers. It was not built for the older demographics of talk radio. And I recognize that if we do an entertaining show, it will attract an audience. So I think it's great that we've got Zoomers and Millennials and Xers and, of course, Boomers listening to our show. So there's a lot to talk about. Before we go on to that, though, I want to mention how great I think it is for these prisoners to be home, these Americans who have been in prison in Russia. And apparently this was a very, very complicated prisoner swap with Russia. And, you know, I've read and heard some things about how unfair it was, because the people that Russia released, the Americans that are now coming home, are journalists and people like that, people who really didn't do anything vicious or mean or violent. And the prisoners that we released in exchange were people like assassins. I mean, I don't care. You know, if we get our people back, then I think that's great. And there are people who are not going to want this to happen while Biden is president, because they don't want Biden, vicariously, Kamala Harris, to get credit for this. But if these people are coming home, if they're coming home, if these Americans are coming home to their families, how can you play politics with this? And how could you really tolerate anybody playing politics with this? And, well, you know, the prisoner exchange wasn't fair because, you know, we gave them assassins and they gave us, you know, like reporters. I mean, so what? Our people are coming home. And isn't that the ultimate goal? And as far as this happening while Biden's president, I think we should put politics aside and just celebrate that Americans are coming home. Also, there is an NFL game on tonight, and you're going to hear it right here on WWL. Yes, it's the very beginning of the 2024 NFL season. It's the Hall of Fame game. The Bears and the Texans, NFL football, and, you know, the Bears have promise this year, and they have just been terrible over the last, I don't know what, maybe decade? They used to be champions. They've sucked. And the Texans are just really coming on strong, and they could be one of the teams to beat in your quest to get to the Super Bowl this year if you're in the AFC. So NFL football is on tonight. That's really cool. The Saints are in Arizona to take on the Cardinals August the 10th, I believe. So, yeah, this is the beginning of the NFL season, and, you know, we're going to have all of the coverage here on WWL. You're not going to hear better analysis of the Saints than you will on Sports Talk every afternoon from 4 to 8, right after our show at Sports Talk. So, you know, tune into the guys, and, you know, Bobby Hebert's among them. And Bobby has a really unique way of analyzing the Saints and analyzing all of that. So very entertaining, but also very accurate. And Deuce McAllister and others, they just do a great job. So very proud of Sports Talk on our station, and check that out from 4 to 8 every afternoon here on WWL. All right, so when I talk about the beginning of MTV, some of you are too young, and you were not of age, or maybe you weren't even born yet when MTV first hit the air in 1980-81. But you do remember the first videos you saw, some of the early videos that remind you of MTV. You know, we all saw a lot of videos back in the day, because MTV does TV shows now. But MTV had videos, and it really did create a music revolution. So on August 1st, 1981, music television went on the air. And in the words that were heard, ladies and gentlemen, rock and roll. And then the theme song for MTV. And then they went into the video, Video Killed the Radio Star by the Buggles. So 43 years later, the radio star and radio as an entertainment medium is still alive and well in America. By 1981, music radio programming had really lost its unique ability to break new artists. And I remember this happening. The big corporations that owned radio stations had accepted the conventional wisdom of the industry that the radio stations would only play the established hits. They didn't want to take a chance on playing songs that people didn't know, so they played the hits. Now, there were exceptions, but the overwhelming trend in radio at the time was to load the playlist with known hits and new hits by known artists, but not breaking new artists with new hits. And by 1981, new artists were less likely to have their new music exposed on radio. So MTV quickly, you know, brought a new opportunity for new artists to get exposed. And it really started to compete with radio. Prior to MTV, there were a few videos. You know, even in the 60s, there were movies like A Hard Day's Night and Help by the Beatles. And those provided exciting visuals to songs. But MTV was a true revolution, because it turned television into a visual radio station. And there were VJs, video jocks, like DJs, VJs, Martha Quinn, Alan Hunter, Nina Blackwood, J.J. Jackson, and Mark Goodman. And these people, in my opinion, at the time, I was on B97 doing the morning show at the time, and these people were just, in my opinion, the coolest. We're going to hear a conversation that I had with Alan Hunter about the first day that MTV went on the air. That's going to be coming up here in just a few minutes. But these guys quickly filled the role of the DJ on radio for a younger generation. Jesse's Girl by Rick Springfield was the number one song in the country in July 1981. And here was this, you know, good-looking young singer. A video was a natural step to conveying messages and emotions of music. And Jesse's Girl became one of the early favorites on MTV. Record labels were suddenly faced with the task of turning songs into videos. And in the case of videos like Girls Just Want to Have Fun by Cyndi Lauper, Love is a Battlefield by Pat Benatar, and later, of course, Thriller by Michael Jackson, these videos were actually mini-movies with a storyline that played out to the lyrics of the song. In 1984, I was a huge fan of Duran Duran. And here I am, you know, we get this new music from this band from the UK, Duran Duran. I love the stuff from the very beginning. And I was playing the hits on my morning show on B97. And as much as I liked Duran Duran and the music, I was primarily motivated to go to their concert in Baton Rouge because of my curiosity about how a band that was essentially born on MTV in America would satisfy a crowd of mainly young people who were used to seeing close-ups of the individual band members in the music videos. You know, the band was going to appear minuscule for the people up in the stands, especially the higher levels, when they came out on stage. They weren't going to see the close-ups. So at that Duran Duran concert, which was their first tour in America in 1984, I witnessed a collection of large video screens all around the stage. And that was used to bring the fans in the higher seats the close-ups of Simon, John, and Nick. And when they showed a close-up of any one of them, the girls screamed. And I remember the close-ups of Nick Rhodes drew the loudest screams. 20 years after the Beatles hit America and set off Beatlemania, I felt like I was witnessing at that concert a new version of fan hysteria over a band. And interestingly, Duran Duran was nicknamed the Fab Five. The extravagant productions of many of the music videos put pressure on artists to manifest the same thing on stage. An artist could look awesome in a music video, but appear lackluster in a live concert setting. Music videos presented a challenge for record labels and their artists. And, you know, I remember talking to many artists, and I would ask them, has the pressure been significant when it comes to performing on stage in a live situation and bringing to life the music videos that you've done. Because you could make somebody look really good in a music video, but they're not necessarily good on stage. Much to the disappointment of nearly everyone who was there in the early years of MTV, MTV has changed. Once it was the source of nonstop music videos, the network evolved into a network of reality-based TV shows like, I'm 12 years old and pregnant, The Real World, which was an obvious reaction to a changing audience. Those who were there in the beginning and in the early years of this innovative new musical medium, they were quick to condemn the network for its change in programming. But note that MTV was the first cable network to make a profit, and it seemed that changing was necessary to attract a new young audience, as the audience that they had originally attracted was getting older. The first video, Video Killed the Radio Star by the Buggles, seemed to offer prophecy that the future of radio was dead. Many believed that adding creative visuals to music would kill radio, but that didn't happen. The invention of television was once predicted as the beginning of the end for radio. Yet radio in 2024 remains a viable medium, reaching 90% of American society. 90%. Radio has the ability to be the only source of vital information during a crisis, a storm, disaster, especially when power goes out and radio remains the only vital source of information and entertainment. And I think one of the reasons that radio is so special is because many of you are listening and you're by yourself. You're alone in the car. You're alone at a desk. You're alone at home. You're listening alone. You know thousands of others are listening at the same time. You're all sharing this together. But you're essentially alone. And so, really, the only thing that exists there is you and the person on the radio. And it's a great opportunity to really build a bond with the audience because radio is such an intimate medium. So MTV is 43 years old today, and someone who was 15 when MTV first hit the air is now in the target audience for talk radio. This further demonstrates that the prime audience for talk radio has strong pop culture reference points that cannot be ignored. And the lack of discussion of topics like the role of MTV in society means the talk radio is not changing with its audience. Now, I admit that I miss the days of MTV playing music videos. But at this point in my life, I wonder how much MTV I would actually be watching. Like so many of you, my television consumption is now watching cable news channels. In some ways, the way I watched MTV. So we can always lament about the past. We can talk about how we realize how great it was. But audiences have changed, and entertainment mediums have to always change to reflect the audience. So on this day when MTV went on the air 43 years ago, let's remember our favorite moments of watching the videos and the VJs on this medium that changed the world of music. I'm Scoot. If you want to join us with a comment this afternoon, or if you want to join us with a comment about the first video that you remember seeing, for some of you, it might have been some of the very early videos like Jesse's Girl or Abracadabra by the Steve Miller Band. Or maybe one of the first videos you saw was Billie Jean by Michael Jackson. If you want to join us, the Oakenheart Jewelers talk and text line is 504-260-1870. So if Video Killed the Radio Star by the Buggles was the first video ever played on MTV, what was the second video? Well, here it is. This was the second video played on MTV. Pat Benatar, You Better Run. I'm Scoot on the air. Hang on. We're coming back with more on WWL. And this was the third video played that first night on MTV. She Won't Dance With Me, Rod Stewart. The blog that I wrote about MTV's birthday and a music revolution is posted on our website, WWL.com. It's also on the Scoot on the Air Facebook page where you can comment on it. And share with me on SOTA Facebook, share with me one of the early videos that you remember seeing on MTV. Just go to Scoot on the Air Facebook. And if you want to join us with a comment, the Oakenheart Jewelers talk and text line is 504 504- 260-1870. So, Ian, what is one of the early videos that you remember seeing on MTV? I know you weren't there at the very, very beginning, but what's one of the early videos you remember seeing?
The first video I really remember seeing that had any sort of emotional impact was Express Yourself by Madonna.
Yeah, wow.
Where it's sort of like the Metropolis-themed video, where it's very steamy. There's a lot of gears and chains, and she's rolling around naked, and I remember that.
Yeah.
It's a good song. It's one of my karaoke jams, honestly.
But it's interesting how we have that relationship. We may have seen other videos at the time, but there are those few videos that stand out in our mind as the first videos that we've seen. Look, I've really got to get into this this interview with Alan Hunter, because this was just a great conversation. Alan Hunter was one of the original VJs on MTV, and I love the story behind the first night MTV went on the air. So I asked Alan, take us back to that day, because we were watching live, and yet it was all pre-recorded, right?
Well, it was pre-recorted. I think the cat has long been out of the bag that we weren't sitting there actually at 4 in the morning. We did record them a day in advance or so. But, we put that whole first day or two together. And then in order to watch the launch, because they did not have it in Manhattan where we all lived, that cable system, like a lot of major market cable systems, didn't carry MTV. They didn't know what it was. They didn't believe in it. So it was probably a couple of million people that were able to watch MTV in the country that first few minutes. We had to haul out in a yellow bus to this crappy bar restaurant in New Jersey to watch the rocket blast off like the rest of America. We had a little party, 200 people from the, from the office, from the studio, and we watched the rocket blast off. We all thought Mark Goodman was going to be the first, because it was scripted for him to introduce himself and the rest of us. But because there were actual videotapes that were put into a machine, it got reordered, and mine got put in first. So I was the first VJ by mistake. Pissed Mark off to this day, and I understand he's going to be on a little bit later and talk about it.
Yeah, I'm going to talk to Mark. I got contact information from Rick Springfield before his show in Biloxi over the weekend.
Isn't that nice? I could have given you that contact information. I'll tell you where he lives, the time he's in.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit later. Alan, take us through the audition for MTV, and what experience did you have leading up to that?
Oh, my God. Well, I went to New York to be an actor. I went to Circle in the Square Drama School in 1980, and I wanted to be on Broadway. I mean, I came out of school in theater and went to New York to seek my fortune, So I was going to movie auditions and Broadway show auditions. I had just gotten finished doing a Midsummer Night's Dream, a new wave punk rock version of Shakespeare's Finest.
Wow.
Lower East Side. Yours truly in tights, basically being a dancer in this crazy, weird version of it. I also was in a David Bowie video, which was really cool. The song is for fashion. And I was in this video 3 months prior to getting a job at MTV. Nobody knew what videos were, but huge David Bowie fan. So to me, that was kind of prescient that I was in a video for David Bowie. And then I bumped into somebody who started MTV. A guy's name was Bob Pittman, and we had some familial connectivity, and he said, you know what, you should come and audition for this thing. I said, what is this thing? He said, videos 24/7. It was like, huh? I don't even understand that.
So, Alan, initially, you're an actor, and initially you're asked to, be on this new thing where you're introducing music videos. Did you think that was a step down?
Well, no, because I had no work at all, and I was totally poor.
Okay.
So anything that was going to pay me any amount of money was a step up. You kidding me? I was a starving actor in New York, waiting tables and bartending. Just trying to live hand to mouth until I made the big break. Did I think it was a redirect of my career? Yeah. But I will say this, nobody knew what the beast was. MTV had probably a year's worth of looking for people to host the show. They didn't really know what the beast was, but obviously they looked for a lot of radio people, and they decided finally that not every radio person looks good for television.
Amen.
So then they went around to, artists, and Kevin Cronin of REO Speedwagon talks about being asked by MTV to be a VJ. So I was a very last minute hire. I came in as an actor. Again, they were looking for everybody. So they were really desperate by the time they came to me. That's my opinion. because my auditions were not that great. But, you know, I knew how to sit in front of a camera and read a teleprompter. Yeah. I loved music. I wasn't used to talking extemporaneously about music like a journalist. But I loved music, and I had the enthusiasm, and I could tell a good joke. So they hired me.
How long did it take, Alan, for MTV to sort of drop the scripted teleprompter and let you guys ad-lib more? How long did that take?
Pretty much immediately. I mean, the whole thing, you just can't believe how much it was a work in progress, an experiment at all times. That whole first year, really. It was held together by duct tape. I mean, people think it was this big thing that shot out of the box, fully formed, but it wasn't at all. Every day, a plant would move around the set because some some executive would say, "I don't like that Bacchus plant, move it around," and then the teleprompter would go away and it would come back again. We did sit in front of it reading scripts, and then they decided it looked so stale that then they just let us play around a little bit. So it was a weird television that, you know, 2 a.m. to watch these talking heads,
yeah,
and one like me mess with the camera. Like the videos, I felt we could play and have fun.
You know, I was in radio at the time, and I just thought it was brilliant. And there was talk that the song would prove to be a prophetic. Video killed the radio star, and there were people who were saying that MTV was going to kill radio, but that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Did you think that this was going to replace radio?
No, I didn't at all. I don't think anybody realized how much it would help the music business. You know, end of the 70s, early 80s. The music business was in terrible shape.
Yeah.
People were not selling albums like they used to. Radio was trying to figure itself out. I don't think MTV was trying to save anybody's hide, but when they came on and people started watching it, the record companies understood that if you didn't have a video on MTV, you weren't going to sell any records. So the emphasis on only touring to make a buck and selling, you know, units of albums became a whole different ballgame when you had a video on MTV. Look, there's certainly examples of videos that probably kept a not so great song alive a little longer than it should have, or the other way, it probably tarnished of someone's career. Take Billy Squier, for instance.
Yes. I mean,
you know, it happened. But I think it was an enhancement. I think people loved it. Certainly, they went out and bought the album, and they went to see the bands live in concert. So, you know, it absolutely did not kill anything. It invigorated everything.
But that video for "Rock Me" by Billy Squier, I mean, you know, you look back on that. I mean, that was kind of embarrassing. And everybody thought he was gay from the video.
I know, but I thought it was so unfair. The video is kind of Nancy, but it's a great song. And I love Billy Squier. It wasn't fair that he. You know, he took another chance for that.
All right, if you're just tuning in, we're talking to one of the original VJs on MTV. Today on the anniversary, the 41st anniversary of MTV launching, Alan Hunter is on the phone with us. Alan, Martha Quinn talked about how close you all were. Were you really that close?
We were and still are. I mean, JJ, our dear friend and fifth VJ, passed away in 2004. That was really traumatic for all of us. He was kind of the father of the group. I mean, we were a disparate bunch, no doubt. We came from different walks of life. The two that got along the best, I think, were Nina and I. She was an actress as well, so we kind of related in that way. Martha was the girl next door darling. Mm-hmm. JJ and Mark were the veterans. Mark and I did not like each other in the beginning because I thought he was an ass. Hole and he thought I was a nerd.
Oh. But
we later came to know each other really well, and we're best buddies. We all keep in contact, you know, via email, and we got a project coming up that we're working on. So it's kind of like we went through, you know, we went through the war together.
How quickly did you start to feel the effects of being on this new music television channel?
Not overnight. This was not a sitcom on NBC that was a smash hit the next week. You know, it's huge. It started out with a couple of million viewers, and, you know, by the time I left in 87, 40 million people could watch MTV. That first couple of months, we didn't have a clue as to how it was being perceived in the rest of the country until we began to go out. About 3, 4, 5 months, they would send us out on a promotional appearance. We'd go to Iowa, somewhere in the heartland, and go to a record company, a record store, and 1,000 kids were there. We all have the same story. We arrive in a limo or a Volkswagen supplied by the local cable company because they didn't have any money back then.
Right.
And there's 1,000 people standing in line to get our autographs. It made no sense to me. But it's because they were all watching MTV, glued to it. Year one, when MTV was available in New York and L.A., and all the cable companies started picking it up because of the I Want My MTV campaign, then the ball game changed. And it started to be, we started to be recognized everywhere, and I could get a decent seat at a New York restaurant.
What was your biggest surprise about your gig on MTV?
How I lived to tell any tales at all. I mean, we were the face of the channel. We represented what was going on in the music business. We were nothing but traffic cops, but I think we were more enmeshed in what was going on. There's no doubt we partied at night and then had to be in the studio the next day. We were definitely burning candles at both ends. And I think that's, at least for me, what gave me kind of a good vibe on television. I knew what I was talking about when I was talking about partying with Bono. And that doesn't mean I was the same stature as Bono or right. the Rolling Stones or Duran Duran. But we were the faces of the channel. They knew us. When we were out and about, they'd say, "Hey, Mark Goodman, how you doing?" Because they watched it, you know? So it was amazing.
Well, yeah, it was interesting that I'm talking to Rick Springfield Friday backstage before the show, and I'm telling him, you know, this interview is going to be part of our show Monday, and I'm going to talk to Alan Hutter. And he said, "Wait, what about Mark Goodman?" So, so he obviously has a relationship with Mark Goodman.
The two of them are kissing buddies. Come on, they're like tight. They're like pals and all this. It's obnoxious.
I'm glad I got the information. information from Rick to get a hold of Mark. So were you ever on MTV totally hungover?
Yes, I was. I know that sounds terrible, but it's in the book, so it's out there in the public. Look, we were all pretty professional, and we had to be. We had a daytime damn job. It's like people who do morning shows.
Yeah.
You know, eventually you got to get up and go in and do the show. I remember the first late night I spent was at the Ritz in New York. I had to interview the Psychedelic Furs and didn't know they were going to not get on until 1:30 in the morning. So I was up very late. I got in the next morning. The interview was at 10 o'clock. Now, a band can come in hungover, but the host of the show is not supposed to be bleary-eyed. That was one of my first examples. Another time, I partied too hard one Thursday night. I partied on a school night, as we used to call it, and I came into my apartment at about 6:30 in the morning. I had an 8 o'clock call. I showered, and I was still buzzing from whatever I did the night before, trying to get through my damn show. And because the crew and we were all such family, they knew I was hurting.
Wow.
I got a terrible cold, and they were like, "Yeah, right," but. Not that often, though.
There was a social consciousness about MTV. There was a choose or lose, and it was encouraging young people to register, and that was during the 1992 campaign with George Bush Sr. as the incumbent and Bill Clinton as the challenger. Bill Clinton accepted a town hall on MTV. Bush refused to come on MTV. Is that why he lost?
Well, ask Bill Clinton if it's the reason he won. Rocking the vote was certainly something. It was kind of like having a video on MTV. Refuse to do that, and you may not sell any albums. I think MTV, you know, did find its social conscience with Live Aid, first off. But they knew that they had this audience that they could Pied Piper to do other things beyond just our little bubble of music. And I think it wasn't that they were being socially responsible necessarily, but it was kind of the right thing to do. And I think it was another way to engage their young audience, to say, let's go and rock the vote. But you can bet the executives at MTV, you know, were palling around with some politicians, and they decided that would be a good thing to get into.
What was the first video of a black artist that aired on MTV?
Well, we had several. We had Gary U.S. Bonds. We had Garland Jeffries. They playing kind of mainly rock and roll. I mean, the controversy that started with Michael Jackson coming on in 1983 was appropriate and right. It was right that MTV got busted for thinking that there was only this small little genre of music that we played, and it was rock and roll. Then why did you have Culture Club or Daryl Hall and John Oates singing soul music in a style from Motown in the 60s, you know, Great American Songbook, but we didn't play the artists who actually, you know, were singing those songs? Now, we wouldn't play anything beyond kind of the 80s genre. Obviously, we wouldn't play 60s Philly. But why couldn't we play Lionel Richie? Why couldn't we play, you know, Rick James had a major beef about it. But the guys that were programming it were basically radio programmers. You know the deal. Mm-hmm. Their bailiwick was rock and roll, and however that was, you know, determined what that genre was, that's what they thought they were playing. What they didn't know, and Mark will tell you the same thing, I don't think they knew the power they had. They had the power to play whatever the F they wanted to play. Mm-hmm. We could have played a wide variety of music, and the audience would have gone right along with this. They didn't know the power they had.
But that was the interesting thing about MTV, is that I remember, you know, in radio, there were songs that were not getting on radio stations because of tight formats, and all of a sudden MTV comes on, and MTV puts these videos on, and that pressures radio stations to start putting songs on that they weren't going to put on before the videos came out.
Absolutely. It could be as innocuous as the Stray Cats, or really, come on, the new wave with Duran Duran and U2, and all the kids were showing up at the local record store saying, I want that Duran Duran album. And the guy's going, who? where are you seeing this music? And they said, on MTV.
Yeah. But was Billie Jean the first, by Michael Jackson, was that the first black artist music video?
No. I'm saying that there were other black artists that were playing before that. Gary U.S. Vaughn and Garland Jeffries were black artists. They were playing more rock and roll, not pop and not R&B, sure.
Yeah.
But there were faces. We had an early Prince song on that was may not have come on before Michael. I get my chronology off. Mm-hmm. But he's the one who certainly broke the pop song barrier. Mm-hmm. And to me, he just happened to be black. I think the issue was less about his skin color and more about his style of music. It was pop, and he thought they were rock and roll. None of us were real privy to that. What was going on in the boardrooms, and that's really upper level executives talking to record company executives and threatening one another, you know, like, you better start playing it. When it happened, we all felt it was the right thing, and it was a very quick sea change at that point. So I don't defend or support the decision not to play them, but I certainly think MTV very quickly said, oh, thank God we're opening the floodgates now for all this different stuff.
Alan, talk about what you're doing now.
Well, I've been on Sirius XM for, I guess, almost 15 years now. Mark and I are marveling that we've had a job this long. Started out to be a very part-time thing for me years ago. I had a film company and was rocking with that. But it's been kind of a funny bookend to our career. I started off announcing songs, and now I'm doing that again. I never was in radio, so I had to get used to the microphone.
Yeah.
I use my hands a lot, and there's no TV camera on me. Why do I have arms?
So briefly talk about the difference between television and radio. What pressures do you, what added pressures do you feel on radio that you didn't feel on television?
To be succinct and to be clear, I think for all of us, when people come up to us to this day, that maybe don't listen to me on Sirius, they say, I didn't really recognize you because you're shorter than Mark Goodman, but I recognized your voice on MTV, and I think, wow, that is so weird. And they'll also have memories of things we said on the, I remember that time you said something about, you know, Bruce Springsteen or Cyndi Lauper, and I go, you remember the things we said? So that was weird to be on television, to have people really only care about what you said.
It's amazing the things that people will remember about what you've said.
It is. Well, you got to be careful, you know, certainly in what you do every day, because they will. And I think that I felt more naked being on the radio, to be honest. I have come to love it, because I can literally be naked and do the radio every day. And I can do it in my own home, because we're working remote these days. So I love radio. I like working the mic, you know.
Cool. Alan Hunter, it has been a pleasure to talk to you on this, the 41st anniversary of MTV going on the air, and you were the first face that we saw, and we'll talk to you again, Alan.
I hope so, and thanks for celebrating number 41. I almost forgot, and have fun talking to Mark Goodman.
All right, Alan Hunter, one of the original VJs on MTV, thanks for your time. All right, that was my conversation a couple of years ago with Alan Hunter. So that's a great conversation. I wanted to just share that with you again. Today is the day MTV first went on the air, August 1st, 1981, 43 years ago. We're taking a break from politics here on the show because there's more to me than just politics. And this is a big part of who I have always been and who I continue to be. So I love talking about this. Coming up, we'll hear from Cindy Wilson of the B-52s. Did she notice a change in popularity when her video started to appear on MTV?
We'll talk about that next. I'm Scoot on WWL. All right, we're celebrating the anniversary of MTV. We do it every year on August 1st. I'm Scoot on the air. So I talked to Cindy Wilson of the B-52s, and I asked Cindy, I said, did you notice a change in your popularity with your audience when your videos started to be played on MTV?
Oh, certainly. It was part of the time. You know, it was fabulous to have that kind of being seen. And definitely it was a new thing. And so we're a very visual band, so we kind of lent itself to be good for that. And yeah, so I think a lot of bands had told me about the first time they saw our videos on MTV. It blew them away, and Saturday Night Live too.
Yeah,
when we played that, that was very much got us out there.
Do you remember the first time you saw a B-52's video on MTV?
Oh, gosh, no. Oh, God.
But that's all right.
Yeah.
That's all right.
I've seen them on YouTube.
You were part of... the B-52s were part of this new wave movement. How would you describe that genre that at the time was really very new?
It was very new. It was... I remember seeing some favorite bands of mine, Blondie, and it was just incredible energy. Mm-hmm. I love those days. It's fabulous.
All right, Cindy Wilson from B-52s talking about the early years of MTV. Still to come, you'll hear from Rick Springfield, Simon Le Bon, and Michael Scores, the lead singer of Flock of Seagulls. Remember the video for Iran? Let's go to Paul in Metairie. Paul, you're on WWL. Good afternoon.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I like MTV, but what I liked before MTV was Midnight Special with Wolfman Jack.
Yeah, that was a great musical show. I remember watching that. I think it was on Friday night, Midnight Special. Wolfman Jack, the guy who stole my cocaine backstage at the Stones concert, he was the MC.
Yeah.
They had rotating MCs in the beginning, but he ended up being the regular MC. And that was a show where, yeah, they performed live, and it was fun for us to see that. Different from MTV, but in a way, it just gave us regular videos—not videos, but live performances from our favorite artists. Paul, I'm glad you called the show. If you want to join us, the Oakenheart Jewelers Talk and Text line is 504-260-1870. All right, this is one of the early videos that I specifically remember on MTV, and this just made me think. As I saw this video and the way they were dressed, I realized, wow, things are changing. And this is a band called Haircut 100. This was a minor hit. Love Plus One is the song. But I just remember how they were dressed, the glasses the guy was wearing. And there was something about that video that just made me think things are changing. And indeed, they did. This is the day that music revolution of MTV began. I'm Scoot on the air, and we'll be back on WWL. Angel Reese has posed in a Chanel bikini, and I've got some specific details about that, which I will be happy to share with you. And I had to look very closely at the pictures so I could gain the knowledge that I needed to accurately describe it to you. I looked at those pictures long and hard, and I will explain what I saw coming up. Also, we'll continue to celebrate MTV's birthday by getting comments from Rick Springfield, Simon Le Bon, and Michael Scores, the lead singer of Flock of Seagulls. I'm Scoot, and we'll be back on WWL. All right, we're celebrating the anniversary of MTV. We do it every year on August 1st. I'm Scoot on the air. So I talked to Cindy Wilson of the B-52s, and I asked Cindy, I said, did you notice a change in your popularity with your audience when your videos started to be played on MTV?
Oh, certainly. It was part of the time. You know, it was fabulous to have that kind of being seen. And definitely it was a new thing. And so we're a very visual band, so we kind of lent itself to be good for that. And yeah, so I think a lot of bands had told me about the first time they saw our videos on MTV. It blew them away. And Saturday Night Live, too.
Yeah.
When we played that, that was very Metcha got us out there.
Do you remember the first time you saw a B-52's video on MTV?
Oh, gosh, no. Oh, God.
But that's all right. That's all right.
I've seen them on YouTube. You know, but,
you were part of... Yeah. The B-52s were part of this new wave movement. How would you describe that genre that at the time was really very new?
Yeah, it was very new. It was... I remember seeing some favorite bands of mine, you know, Blondie and it was just incredible energy. Mm-hmm. I love those days. It's fabulous.
All right, Cindy Wilson from B-52s talking about the early years of MTV. Still to come, you'll hear from Rick Springfield, Simon Le Bon, and Michael Scores, the lead singer of Flock of Seagulls. Remember the video for Iran? Let's go to Paul in Metairie. Paul, you're on WWL. Good afternoon.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I like MTV, but what I liked before MTV was Midnight Special with Wolfman Jack.
Yeah, that was a great musical show. I remember watching that. I think it was on Friday night, Midnight Special. Wolfman Jack, the guy who stole my cocaine backstage at the Stones concert, he was the MC.
Yeah.
They had rotating MCs in the beginning, but he ended up being the regular MC. And that was a show where, yeah, they performed live, and it was fun for us to see that. Different from MTV, but in a way, it just gave us regular videos, not videos, but live performances from our favorite artists. Paul, I'm glad you called the show. If you want to join us, the Oakenheart Jewelers Talk and Text line is 504-260-1870. All right, this is one of the early videos that I specifically remember on MTV, and this just made me think, as I saw this video and the way they were dressed, I realized, wow, things are changing. And this is a band called Haircut 100. This was a minor hit. Love Plus One is the song. But I just remember how they were dressed, the glasses the guy was wearing. And there was something about that video that just made me think things are changing. And indeed, they did. This is the day that music revolution of MTV began. I'm Scoot on the Air, and we'll be back on WWL. Angel Reese has posed in a Chanel bikini, and I've got some specific details about that, which I will be happy to share with you. And I had to look very closely at the pictures so I could gain the knowledge that I needed to accurately describe it to you. I looked at those pictures long and hard, and I will explain what I saw coming up. Also, we'll continue to celebrate MTV's birthday by getting comments from Rick Springfield, Simon Le Bon, and Michael Scores, the lead singer of Flock of Seagulls. I'm Scoot, and we'll be back on WWL.